I'm James.
I'm Carrie.
I'm Lacey.
And I'm Lee at Just One More Fix.
A proud member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the show you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual host.
Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready, because geekiness begins in three, two, one.
Hey friends, Jordan Woods Robinson here from AMC's The Walking Dead and Blue Man Group, and this is PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. We're a geek podcast for geek culture, so are you ready to get your geek on? Sit back, relax, grab some gluten-free, non-GMO popcorn, and let's dive into the world pop culture bliss.
You are listening to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
PopX Cast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
All right, and we are live here on PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. Oh my gosh, it is so good to be back here in the limelight and streaming live back on PopX. What's up, Austin Burke?
Joseph, I'm so excited. Ready Player One has already happened. It was a cultural phenomenon, and Steven Spielberg, in my opinion, is back. I'm so excited to talk about this movie,
Joe. Oh,
me too, man.
Had a really awesome trip. I don't know if anybody follows me over on Instagram, but we had a really awesome trip out to Las Vegas last week, and got to see a really couple cool things out at the Avenger Station at Treasure Island. If you've never been to Las Vegas and you've never been to the Avenger Station, there's only two in the world. There's one in Europe and there's one here in Las Vegas. And it's a really cool walkthrough. It's a self-guided tour, but you get to see actual prop replicas from the films. And it was awesome to see that. And you get to see to scale how tall the Incredible Hulk is. And of course, if you know me, I'm a kind of a Hulk fan. So I did pick up some Marvel comic Incredible Hulk. I guess you call them cufflinks.
Fancy
schmancy. But I had a great time out in Vegas. I got to go out into the middle of desert. It was crazy. It was awesome, but it was fantastic. Austin, what have you been up to?
Man, since I've started my brand new job, I've not been up to much. It's kind of taking up most of my time. It's time to enter adulthood, Joe, and get a lot less time when you start your career, that's for sure. But I have watched a lot of movies, and I've still tried to keep up with the whole internet thing. It's difficult, Joe. It's hard when you get out of college, that's for sure.
Yes, it's not easy, that's for sure. But well, cool, man. And you know what? Mike is going to be joining us on the camera right after the news tonight, because he has some pretty awesome things he wants to share about Ready Player One. And just, you know, how he's connected into everything. But before we do that, let's go ahead and dive right on in right now to a little bit of news. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Extra, extra, read all about it. This is PopX News, coming to you live right here on PopXcast.com.
That's right, PopXcast.com. So I guess we should probably, like, Do we even do the opener? We went straight to the news.
I mean, who needs it, Joe?
Let's do the opener right quick. Let's not screw with Mike too much over there. Hey guys, welcome to PopX, where science fiction meets pop culture. I'm your host, Joseph Burke, Central Florida's seasoned comic book nerd and retro enthusiast. We'd like to welcome everyone joining us live right now in the PopX.live chat room. Come hang out with us and join the conversation at PopXcast.com.
And I am Austin Burke, your Appalachian geek at heart. If you guys missed our last episode, which seems like it was an eternity.
It was only 3 weeks
so
ago.
So long ago. Yeah. I know. I can't believe that. Yeah. It was about the Infinity War origin story. Check our official website at popxcast.com for this and other great past shows from PopX. And also, if you guys head over to Google Play and iTunes after the show, click that subscribe button. We would be very thankful. You guys can catch up on some amazing shows from the PopX archive while you're there. And we can certainly hope that you would give us a 5-star rating and review. Show us some love. Leave us 5 stars or whatever you want, but we prefer
yeah.
5.
Yeah, I would take 5. Yeah.
5's nice.
Maybe, like maybe a free buffet at Golden Corral. I don't know. Ooh. Or maybe not.
I think I do. That'd be good.
Oh, man.
That sounds good.
All right, so let's dive right on into the news here since we're ready to go with that. So the top of the list this week, Spider-Man will finally be swinging over onto the PlayStation 4. Now, we knew that this was coming. We knew that it's been in development. We've seen teasers. We've seen trailers. But then all of a sudden, it just kind of dropped off the radar. Nobody heard anything about it. Mm. But the PlayStation Pro, PS4 and PS4 Pro, it will be on September the 7th. And now that the release date has finally became public knowledge, we'd be hoping to see some kind of advertising for Spider-Man in the theaters before Avengers Infinity War. Now, that is a promotional opportunity too good to pass up. And we're hoping that Marvel and Insomniac are working together for a new trailer for moviegoers. For those of you who are wondering, Spider-Man is definitely a PS4 exclusive. It's not on Xbox or any other system. Mm-hmm. And the game is not going to come anywhere in Microsoft territory. So yes.
I don't know if you saw the trailer or the announcement for the release date for it, Joe, but this game to me, it harkens back to the old Spider-Man games, which I think is cool, but it's such an open world like style of play, and I love that Spider-Man suit.
You can literally
think it's spectacular.
You can go all over Manhattan. Like, I mean,
that's so cool.
I would expect it to be like kind of on the level of Grand Theft Auto, where it's a free open world type thing, but you're Spider-Man and you're instead of like stealing cars, you're helping people.
Stealing cars. I mean,
or swinging cars around in circles with your web slinger. Okay. I don't know.
Be cool. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was super cool. So moving on, this past Monday was a good day for the fans and casts of CW's DC Comics-inspired superhero shows. The network announced its renewals of its programming coming back next year. And, of course, we have Arrow Season 7, The Flash Season 5, Legends of Tomorrow Season 4, and the CW plans to bring back, listen to this, Matt Ryan as Constantine on board as a series regular. That is awesome news. Also, Supergirl Season 4 and the brand new hit Black Lightning Season 2. So, Joe, all of these shows got renewed. Are you surprised?
I'm not, because CW is hitting it out of the park. Now, I do have a confession to make. I am a little bit behind. During the break at Christmas 4 months ago, I have not been able to catch up, because since it's 5 shows, I mean, it's just so difficult. And there's so much stuff I'm watching. There's so much stuff I'm doing right now. And I'm just like, I don't have hours in the day. And so their CW is making it very hard for the comic nerd to keep up with the storyline. So, I'm going to try and do my best, hopefully over summer, to try to catch up and binge watch some of these as they come out into immediate release over on streaming. So,
yeah, it's difficult, man. The Flash is really the only one that I'm caught up on. All of the others, I've only watched episode 1 of Black Lightning. I mean,
really?
That's it. You know, I've heard great things about it. So I really need to take a couple of weeks, like you said, this summer and play the catch-up game, because I'm sure they're all doing very well.
Yeah. All right. So that is for that. And so next up, now we were talking about video game systems earlier. You may or may not have heard about this, but this is kind of a big deal for older gamers like myself. Atari has returned to the video game console market in nearly 24 years. It's been over 24 years since Atari has released any console or anything.
Wow.
And get this, and it's the first one since the old school Atari Jaguar. Wow. That's really going back to like 1993, 92. So the company has revealed that the system will now be referred to as the Atari VCR, or video game console, computer system. And if the name sounds familiar, it's because that was the name that was also passed around in the late 70s when the Atari 2600 initially came out. Now think about that. Attendees at the Game Developers Conference will be able to check out the Atari VCS as well as its controller prototypes, including the classic retrofitted joystick. Look at that one button.
That's crazy.
That is so awesome. Which resembles the classic Atari 2600 controller as well as the all brand new modern controller. Now the Atari VCS doesn't have a release date at the moment, but more details are about to come out, and it can be found if you want to see pictures, you want to get on their email list or whatever, definitely go to ataribox.com. And that remote, that modern remote looks pretty legit. I like that raised button there. Jeez.
Dude, I this is crazy. I mean, look at this. Is this not just the perfect blend of old meets new?
Yeah.
And even if you're a hardcore, like, oh, I'm staying away from Nintendo because I'm only about war games, because there are a lot of people out there like that. This is such a cool thing. And I expect a big hit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know how this is not going to hit very hard. It's according on what the price is. I don't know if they've announced how much it's going to be or how expensive, but I do see this being a big hit. And I think the concept and the design is great.
Well, if there's two different kinds of platforms it can be. It can be a super platform like a PlayStation, which is kind of like beefed up graphics, GPU processing and all that. Or it could be more of a simplified system like the Nintendo Switch, where it's more of a universal base where you can play the retro games, you can stream content, you know, but it's more of like a home system that kind of encompasses everything. So, yeah, I don't know. It can be one or two. I've talked to several people about it, so I'm interested to see what the specs are on it so I can compare and contrast to the PS4 or the
Xbox. That sounds fantastic. Yeah, it really does, man. It looks cool, it sounds cool, and I can't wait for it. Yep. Another thing that I cannot wait for is Indiana Jones, who is back. He is ready to embark on his next adventure. Speaking at the Empire Awards, Steven Spielberg confirmed that the fifth Indiana, I can't believe that, is starting filming in the United Kingdom in April of 2019. No details if Harrison Ford is still alive. No details about the story.
You're horrible.
He's old, man. He's old.
You are horrible.
The story of the movie are known at this point. Spielberg will direct, and Harrison Ford will return to his iconic role as the archaeologist and adventurer from Raiders of the Lost Ark, Temple of Doom, The Last Crusade, the one which shall not be named, and Jones's son, Mutt Williams, played by Shia LaBeouf in the movie that shall not be named, will not be returning. So there's that, and that's great.
Poor Shia LaBeouf. He gets a bad rap. Just do it.
You know what? I don't hate him as an actor. I really don't. That movie, man. Movie did not work for me.
Well, that music video of him dancing with that girl, it just didn't do it for me either. I'm just like, okay, this is kind of strange. This is pushing this is pushing my own comfort level.
He's a weird dude.
He's
man.
A weird dude.
Weird dude. Good actor. Weird dude.
I don't know. Man. Anyway, moving along. All right. So last but not least on the list this week, and this one I literally just found out about right before we went live on the air. X-Men: The Dark Phoenix. Now we were talking early in the year how Fox is getting ready to release two X-Men films. X-Men Dark Phoenix is going to see some considerable changes before its release. Now, Simon Kinberg directed the film, is in need of multiple weeks worth of reshoots to change significant story points in the film. Now, after testing the film, the 20th Century Fox has elected to bring the film back into production ahead of its release. Now, they will have a significant roadblock in doing so, as actress Sophie Turner will be heavily tied up in obligations to Game of Thrones final season through September. Now, the film has already been pushed back to Valentine's Day 2019. Holy cow. So 20th Century Fox's other property, the other one we were talking about, New Mutants, is also in the process for even more significant reshoots after having its release date delayed nearly an entire year. It was supposed to come out next Thursday, ladies and gentlemen. Next Thursday. We're talking April the 13th. But the film will add a few new characters to round out the movie as well as make it scarier, overhauling the majority of the film. Almost half of the movie, oh my God, three quarters of the film is supposedly to be reshot. Oh, this is insane. Such a holdup has prompted the film to push its release date back to August the 2nd, 2019.
Jeez.
Dang. Jeez. It was originally for April 13th, 20. Austin, what is up with Fox and their X-Men properties right now?
I'm hearing, okay, so the X-Men Dark Phoenix, that one doesn't bother me as much because they have seen a lot of success with that February date. And yeah. then this year you saw Black Panther kind of just make loads of money. So yeah. that doesn't bother me. But the New Mutants thing kind of freaks me out because they pushed it once. I'm like, all right, I get it. You reshoots, whatever. They pushed it again. And I'm hearing John Hamm was Mr. Sinister, and they've completely taken that out. I'm hearing they're casting Antonio Banderas in an unknown role. They are completely changing this movie. The movie apparently turned out okay, but then Fox saw the success of It, right? And that's the reason that they originally went back for reshoots, because they wanted to make this a pure horror film. So once they did those reshoots, they came back, and Fox still wasn't happy with the film. So they have just shuffled this so much. And I get why they didn't want the young adult feel to it, because we've seen so much of that. But I actually saw that trailer and I was like, this could be good. Like, it looks like it could be really good.
It could work. It could work. Yeah.
It could work. But now that they're going back and redoing the entire thing, and it scares me, man. It really scares me. And the fact that they had John Hamm as Mr. Sinister is interesting to me, but now that's no longer a thing. I just don't know what to think about this movie, Joe. Fox is...
I'm reading over in the chat room right now, Doug Hawks, who's one of my friends here in Claremont. He said that I expect him to kill both projects. And, you know, when you think about that...
It's possible.
It is extremely possible, especially with the Disney-Fox merger, because they may be like... Fox may have wanted to rush these two films out, but now that the properties are being transferred over to Disney Studios, Disney may be like, this is crap. We're not, you know, we don't know what. So seriously, behind the scenes, we may not know what is going on. And that may be some kind of studio push to, you know, get it under the Disney umbrella before it's released, because, you know, Disney likes to tweak their things. So I don't know.
It's very possible. And we don't know what's going on.
And by 2019, Disney would have, the acquisition would have been complete.
Which is, it's going to be a whole new X-Men. Just count on that, because they are not bringing back these
characters. And Doug literally just reiterated what I just said. He said, and wait for X-Men in the MCU as after the Disney acquisition. So there we go. We just talked about that. All right, so we have two hit its of the week for you this week, and hit it. I used to have a sound effect. Wait a minute, I do have a sound effect. Here we go.
And now it's time for PopX's of the week.
Yeah. Okay.
I like that.
Yeah, I do too. So I went to the local comic book shop today, and I picked up a couple of books that definitely you should be on the lookout for. Okay. There's some storylines going on right now between both DC and Marvel. This one in particular is the Doomsday Clock. Now, the finally released book 4 of the Doomsday Clock, and this is going to be a really awesome story about how Dr. Manhattan and everything comes in, and the whole DC universe just gets blown away. It's pretty awesome.
That's great.
So I haven't read that one yet, but now we're getting into the good. I think this is going to be awesome for me. This is Ultimate, World War Hulk. And so World War Hulk, this is 714. And shortly after this storyline, there's going to be a whole new Incredible Hulk, since they found that Banner is alive. Banner is coming back to Marvel Comics. They are rebooting it as Ultimate Incredible Hulk. Now, this is the precursor story to that. And basically, it's going to be told from the perspective as if the Hulk is the original Frankenstein monster, from a horror perspective. And so they're going with a more of a dark, not like, you know, he's the creature from the Black Lagoon or anything, but he's more of the monster that lurks in the shadows type thing. And so it's going to be an interesting take on that. And the next up I have here, this is Amazing Spider-Man 797. And look at the Green Goblin. Look at that cover, man.
I love that.
Isn't that a great, beautiful cover? Wow. So you heard me right, ladies and gentlemen. This is 797. We are three issues away from the iconic 800th issue of The Amazing Spider-Man. Now, let me tell you, when I was collecting Spider-Man in high school from 94 to 98, I was in the 380s.
Jeez.
So that's how long that franchise has been going. And last but not least, for the first Hit It of the Week, I went out to Las Vegas and I went to world famous Torpedo Comics. Now, Torpedo Comics is at all the San Diego Comic Cons. They're known around the world for their amazing library of vintage comics. And I went in and was able to purchase one that I've been looking for a while on eBay, but this guy had it like literally right in front of me, so I had to buy it. It's the first appearance of the Red Hulk.
Oh.
Red Hulk number one. And this, of course, if you don't know the story, Red Hulk, he is the General Thunderbolt Ross. He took the serum and turns into the Red Hulk. Awesome buy. Now, the second Hit of the Week. Oh, boy.
Oh, dude, I love it. It's my favorite.
So,
playing it before the show.
It's this thing.
So cool.
I mean, seriously, this is the Infinity Gauntlet. All so six cool. stones. And so I'm going to put my hand. I'm literally, if you can see, there's a bar there. Can you see the bar? Can you see the little rings you put your fingers in?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to put my hand in here. Watch what happens.
Oh, I didn't know you controlled it individually. Oh, wow.
So I'm just going to rest it on my shoulder. And so you can lock it, which is kind of cool. So I'm going to lock it. See? So if you want to display it like that, you can do it.
Oh.
And if you hit the soul stone in the middle. So evidently that is a sound from the movie when the gauntlet fires up. Let's hear that one more time.
Dude.
Can you imagine when Thanos puts his thing on and you hear that sound? You're like, I heard that on Pop X first. Pop X had that sound. But
that is incredible.
And here's
it's like a little sneak peek.
It is like a sneak peek. And here's a weird thing I saw on this. There is a weird carving structure in the middle of this, in the palm. I can't figure out if it's an eyeball. I can't figure out if it's the eye to eternity. I can't figure out if it's a cannon that he can shoot or blast out of his palm. I don't know what that is. If you know what that is, please comment, because I have never in my life seen that. That's a weird structure to have in the palm of your hand, right?
It's got to mean something.
It's got to mean something. I don't know what that is. I don't know. It may not be nothing. It just may be the way that the thing is molded. I don't know. But, I mean, seriously, look at my head and look how big that is. That is ridiculous. If you want one of these, I would highly recommend. There's a store online, Big Bad. Let's see, BigBadToyStory.com. They sell them, and as well, they're a limited item. They're only like very few, far between. If you didn't get on a list like 6 months ago, you probably won't be able to get one. But I'm very blessed to have that one. I got on there probably back in September when it first came out, and I was like, I got it. Yep. All right, so that is PopX's Hit It of the Week as we get ready to transition over into Ready Player One. So look at this. Oh my gosh.
Oh, that is beautiful.
That is pretty gorgeous. I like the graphic there, Mike. I like what you're doing. I'm feeling your graphic vibes. So, All right. Now, we're going to do this a specific way because I want Mike to go last, because Mike has got a lot of stuff he wants to share about the film. And when Mike wants to share something about a movie, we just like let Mike share whatever he wants to share about the movie. But now, Austin Burke, I'm going to let you go first. And so we're going to do this open roundtable discussion style. And it's going to be very open, unscripted. But it's going to be a really great conversation about the film. And we want you guys to share this on your Facebook, share this on your YouTube, on your Twitter and Instagram. We have some posts on our official Instagram page. So feel free to copy and share those. But we want people to come and join us live, okay? So do that for us. And we will thank you so much. Now, Austin Burke, take it away.
Oh, Joe. First question: are we allowed to spoil the movie?
Let's go ahead. Let me go ahead and throw up the spoiler alert, because if you've not seen the film, then this is probably your point where you want to check out. Okay, go see the movie, then come back and listen to PopX. But we are going to talk about spoilers. Okay, so let me go ahead and roll that, and then I'll let Austin get officially started. Thanks for reminding me.
You're welcome.
You are about to enter a PopX spoiler alert. Beyond this point, there is no return. You have been warned.
All right, as you hear the purge sound in the background, we are ready to go. Mr. Burke.
Ah, You have been warned, ladies and gentlemen. Listen, I have been so excited to just kind of buckle down and talk a lot about this movie. I did a review to it, but it's hard to talk about a film with so many pop culture references and cameos and not spoiling anything about it. So I went into this movie with moderate expectations. I watched the trailers, and while they didn't blow me away, I still liked what I saw. I was a little worried about the visuals because the way that it's presented in the trailer kind of, I didn't really feel like, I understand it's a video game, it's an avatar, whatever. I just didn't know if I was feeling the look of the characters. And I'm a guy that, I know nothing about the books. I've never read them. So I didn't really know what to expect from this movie. But then you see that name of the director and Steven Spielberg, you've let me down once or twice out of how many films now? He's in the upper 20s, 30s. I mean, the guy has an incredible track record. And even if I don't love a movie that he comes out with, I still really enjoy myself. And even the movies that don't come off as spectacles or blockbusters, there's still magic in there. A movie like The Post that came out last year, I didn't love the film, but I could feel Spielberg's presence, and you could see through the performances and just the way that the movie looked that he is in control. And I felt the same way with Ready Player One, except Ready Player One was spectacular. I loved this movie. I have not felt this way about a Spielberg film in 10, 15 years. And it's not just, okay, you get these references, you get the cameos. Ooh, there's a character. Ooh, there's the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Oh, there's the Ferrari from Ferris Bueller in the background, not even highlighted in one of the shots. This is how amazing and how much care went into this movie. They're not in your face. They're not kind of shoehorned in the script. Oh, look at that. Look at this.
Yeah.
I love how he handled these references and these cameos and just all of the little pop culture references in this movie. They're subtle, but they're there and they work and they make sense, because when you go into a video game, you're going to want to become the person or the thing that you look up to most.
Right.
And I understand they couldn't get the rights to Disney, even though you heard a few Star Wars references in there, but they couldn't show them. So it was a little bit jarring not seeing Marvel characters, but you have to look back. It's the rights issues, okay? But seeing characters like Batman and seeing the Back to the Future vehicle, seeing the T-Rex, seeing King Kong, for goodness sakes, all of this was just the icing on the cake of what was an incredible joyride from start to finish. And I think the biggest complaint that I've heard the most about this movie is we don't get to spend enough time with the characters out of the Oasis, right? Mm. We get the character development through the Oasis. And yes, it was a little jarring not being able to relate with them as much. And I'm not talking about the main two, our guy and our girl here. I'm kind of talking more along the lines of the side characters, okay, right? The three characters that come in with the end. You don't get a lot of time to spend with them. And honestly, I don't think they were the strongest actors and actresses. It was one of my few negatives with the movie. But here was the thing that I said in my review. This is a movie that puts you in the bodies of these characters within this world, right? And this is a world that you don't want to be living in. The reason that they go in the Oasis is to get away from their normal lives. So I think the way that Spielberg portrayed these characters is when you're getting to look at them in real life, you don't relate with them as much as you would, say, a character from another Steven Spielberg movie, because that's how real life is in this world. It's boring. There's not a lot happening. And it's just somewhere that you really don't want to be. Now, when you're in the Oasis, that's where you get the character development, right? You get to see even the most minute characters. You get to see what they're about, who they are, and why they enjoy spending time with each other. I mean, my goodness, in this movie, his best friend, he had never met until later on in the movie. And I think that's the world that we're in here. And I think that's one of the reasons I can forgive not getting that character development outside of the Oasis. And that's really one of my few negatives, because Joe, and I hate doing this, right? This is just a movie that I had an absolute blast with.
Yeah.
It's a movie that I had so much fun watching that I can kind of overlook some of those negatives that kind of bog the film down for me. It's probably the coolest looking movie that I've seen in a long time, because like I said in the trailers, the special effects kind of bother me, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you get in and you start watching the film, you realize that the Oasis looks like a video game, it kind of feels like a video game.
Because it is a video game.
It is a video game, but you get that realism.
Yeah.
You get emotions. You get the eye movements and the mouth movements in these characters. And our lead, I believe his name is Ty Sheridan. I think that's his name. He's fantastic. And he's a guy that I saw in Mud, and he's Cyclops in X-Men, if you guys don't know that. He is a fantastic lead character. And I loved every bit of him on screen. And then our main girl, I can't recall her name right now, but she was actually in a movie a couple of weeks ago that came out in a few theaters called Thoroughbreds. That's my third favorite movie of the year right now. She was phenomenal.
Yeah, she's awesome. Phenomenal. She's a great actress.
Ready Player One is my second favorite movie of the year. So she is a girl that is just coming up, and she is absolutely fantastic in what she's trying to do. You have two great leads. You have a fantastic bad guy in Ben Mendelsohn, and you have some crazy, awesome supporting characters within the Oasis. I thought TJ Miller was hilarious as the film's villain. And I just had a fantastic time.
I could tell that was his voice immediately right off the bat. I was like, oh my God.
As soon as he comes on screen, man, I'm like, that's TJ Miller
that's
from Deadpool.
Yep.
And you know what I loved about his character, Joe? You never saw him. You never saw his real
name. No, you never did.
It's the kind of guy that just comes in, he builds everything up for 10 years, and he's the coolest guy on the game, and he can defeat anyone. But he's probably the kind of guy that's just sitting at home on the couch, not doing a thing. Mm-hmm. You know,
I kind of picture him. Do you remember the point in early gaming when the Leroy Jenkins thing went around?
Leroy Jenkins.
He's kind of like the Leroy Jenkins of Ready Player One, I think.
He really is. Yeah. And I think the way that Spielberg just kind of, he played to all of the 80s fans and all of the people that are around that age, but he also played to the video game lovers, man. I mean, they're throwing around like poning and just like video game terms.
Spawning.
Like, who throws around? These are terms that are going to be inserted into the dictionary at some point because they're becoming so
fun. I mean, heck, I use them all the time, actually. So,
yeah, I mean, it's just, that's what Spielberg does, man. He pleases the old crowd. He pleases the new crowd.
Yeah.
And I've heard some people that don't like the movie, and I get it. I don't really know how you feel if you've read the book, because I've never read the book, but I'm actually hearing online some people don't like the book as much, and they're actually kind of surprised with how good the movie was. But that's just what I've heard from a couple of my YouTubers.
That's interesting. That's an interesting take on it.
That's what I've heard. So, and I heard they changed it very much. They're like the Shining scene.
Yeah.
The Shining scene and the race scene, and I'll let you talk about it in a minute, Joe. But those are two of my favorite scenes. The Shining scene is apparently not in the book. So that's just one of the things that Spielberg changed about the movie. But I've talked enough, Joe. I loved it. I loved it.
You're giving me great talking points, man. You're giving me great talking points. For me, honestly, and now this is coming from an individual who has never completed the book. I've read a couple of chapters, and then life happened, and I, you know, I had to figure out how to like balance my time, and I was hoping to be able to finish the book before the film came out. But sadly, that wasn't true. Now, going into the theater as a complete novice of this universe and of this book and of this lore, if you will, I was blown away because being a child of the 80s myself and being as much into pop culture as I am, when I was watching a lot of these cameos and these Easter eggs and all this craziness going on, I was like, holy cow, there was Freddy Krueger. There was Jason Voorhees. And of course, you know, you Chucky. I don't want to spoil too much about what he does, but it's pretty awesome. the line defense. You know, it was just some really mind blowing for me. And Steven Spielberg, I don't know if you captured this at the first, but when the movie opened, it was the retro intro to Amblin. It was '80s intro to Amblin. Yeah, and I caught that immediately. I'm like, oh my gosh, he just went back 30 years and it was awesome. And here's the thing. One of my favorite films of all time is a movie called War Games with Matthew Broderick. This movie kind of had some framing and some like there was dialogue in the way that the villains were. It kind of felt like I was back in the 80s watching an 80s thriller, sci-fi thriller like War Games. That's what it felt like.
Yes.
I mean, And he captured that nuance, that essence of that retro 80s style perfectly. And it even the frames of the shot and how they were just like depicted the villains or the heroes. There's certain scenes in dialogue where, you know, the camera's kind of down at a lower third angle and it's looking up and it's like, wow, that's kind of retro-y looking. Mm-hmm. And even some of the scenes themselves had kind of a old school vibe to it. And I really appreciated that. But got to read the rest of the book then if you like war games. I'm reading Doug Hawk's comments over here.
Cool.
But for me, though, diving into that world, and I'm a gamer. You guys probably already have picked up on that. I love to play Call of Duty. I have a Nintendo Switch. I have every gaming console, including the Atari 2600 that we just talked about a few minutes ago. And they're in working condition, mint condition, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. And so that's going all the way up to the Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Genesis, Sega Genesis, Sega CD, all the way up to today's modern PS4 Pro and Nintendo Switch. I'm not an Xbox person by anything, but the thing about this movie that just literally entrapped my mind was the combination of video game nuances, like you had said, Austin, like, you know, just the verbiage, the style, even how the lead was opening up his door and collecting the coins as an enemy was like destroyed. So cool. He was opening it up and you'd see his little bank fill up, you know, and I was like, awesome. Oh my God, that is so cool. Because, you know, if you lose coin, you die. It's you know, it's almost like a form of XP. Yes, I did have a Sega Dreamcast, Luke, but it was really awesome, though. Because I see all these little things that he had thrown in there. So he had to have, he either knew about it or he had to have a team to research the actual world of video gaming to capture it in its true essence. And it almost was like Second Life on crack. I mean, you know, remember Second Life when it came out in like 2006 or something like that? It was crazy.
On crack.
Yeah, but it's like, it's so much more. You know, because you can be any character in pop culture that you want to be. And I love the fact of how this entire movie is based around the scientist, the lead video gamer, the programmer. What was it? Holiday.
Yeah.
And forgive me on the names if you Ready Player One people, because I am a novice. I did state that at first. But it was like 4K Second Life. That's pretty good, Duck. But, you know, Halliday, you know, it was interesting because it's like a modern day Steve Jobs, but he's an introvert and he's not very social. There's things that he wanted to do before he died that he didn't get to do. And I think that's beautiful because they get to relive parts of his life and make those things happen that he wasn't able to make happen for himself.
Didn't you feel like a Garth flavor from Bill and Ted? As well, like just the way that he kind of
like he was George Carlin, you know, he was the George Carlin. And that was beautiful. And then Simon Pegg, you know, can we just talk about Simon Pegg for a second? I mean, this guy is popping up in films everywhere, and these are blockbuster films. I mean, he's been in Star Trek franchise, and just seeing him now coming over into Ready Player One as one of the leads as well. It was just amazing. And I love that guy. I love his acting. Mm-hmm. I love everything about Simon Pegg. I could actually do with more Simon Pegg. I'd like to, he's not in the MCU yet. I think we need to bring Simon Pegg into the MCU.
100%. 100%. The extra life scene, the coin that ended up being his giving to our main character, dude, audible response from the theater.
Yeah.
Just like cheering and screaming. That was one of my favorite things.
Yeah, we got a really nice response last night, too, because there was a lot of guys crying. You look over and they're like, oh, my God. I was like, you're 55 years old. What's wrong with you?
You weirdo.
Hey, stop it. Maybe on Avengers when Cap dies, but not right now. It's too early for that. But overall, man, it's just it makes you think about what gaming could be.
Yeah.
You know, it makes you think about the evolution, because right now we're entering the world of VR. I mean, if you look at the show card for this week, you know, he's wearing the headset and he's got his VR visor on. We have VR now. We're not far away from that, folks. And we Doug Hawks and myself actually did a thing over at Disney called The Void. And it's this interactive VR experience where you put on this suit and you feel, when you get tasered from a stormtrooper, or, you know, you feel the firing of your gun in your hand. And so check that out. So, we have this technology now. And so this is not too far fetched for us in our minds and brains, because this is more of a reality than it is, like a Stanley Kubrick or some kind of crazy Ridley Scott science fiction epic classic. This is more of like, this could really happen. This is not too far from science fiction. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Even though there's no holiday living today.
That's true.
You know, I mean, our holiday was Steve Jobs. I think our holiday was Steve Jobs. And when Steve Jobs died, I think, you know, Apple's never been the same since.
That's true.
But yeah, I think Halliday maybe even be like a homage to Jobs in some way, even though the two competed in the film in the headlines.
It's true.
I think it was interesting. It's interesting when you start pulling it back. But.
I love the corporate overlord feel to this movie. One of my favorite scenes that wasn't the Shining scene or the race scene was the scene where you have these guys feeding this information into his ear. He's bringing up the Ferris Bueller references, the Breakfast Club. Yeah. He has no clue what he's talking about.
No clue.
I mean, the guy, he is the prime example of a corporate overlord that's just trying to do this and do it for the money. And I think that was just a great little, like, it's subtle symbolism, but it's symbolism. And I thought Steven Spielberg throwing that in, I thought that was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. And he's so good at what he does. I mean, Steven Spielberg... Even a film like this, I mean, let's be real, 85% of the film is CGI. Well, 80%, 80%, maybe 83%. I don't know. But he's taken a CGI frontier and made it a story that we feel compassionate about. That's Steven Spielberg.
Yeah. And the characters, to me, were more compelling in the CGI world than they were in real life.
Because did you notice the color tones that they used in real life?
I did, and I loved them.
I love color tones. I always pick that up because, you know, reds encompass evil, and blue encompasses good or calm, and then orange is kind of like your cautionary. And then, but when you start mapping it out and kind of bleeding the colors a little bit, making it dull, it kind of gives the whole movie a little bit of a dull vibe. I think Austin Burke just like left. I think he's gone. Welcome back, Burke. I was just saying though, you know, you can tell how he's bled the colors down a little bit in the real world.
Yeah.
It's a huge stark difference. Like if you was to see the frames side by side, like the real world, dark and dreary, Blade Runner-y, the Avatar world, vibrant, neon colors, luminescent. You know,
and every place that they went to within that world, there was even like subcolor tones, right? At the end, you have that big gloom and doom.
Even
castle,
doom,
right?
Yeah, even doom.
And
yeah.
you've got the reds and the darks. And then like when they're on the dance floor, you've got the purples and the vibrant colors, man. What they did with color here was spectacular.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just everything about this movie.
That's one of the things when I was in high school, I had a English teacher, and then we'll go to Mike. But I was in advanced placement English. This is English level 5 for a high school student. And he taught us about colorism that was used in all films to dictate what scene was happening. So there's color nuances that's added throughout all films to kind of give you a vibe. You know, like I said, the reds, an evil scene, and the blues and the greens, more of a calm scene. That's why when you watch Lord of the Rings and you're in the Shire, you know, you see these vibrant greens and you know it's a relaxed, calm state. You know that nothing bad is going to happen in the Shire. You know that. But then you get, you know, hundreds and thousands of miles away and you get the reds and the fires and the evils. And, you know, so think about that. All right. So with that said, we have Mr. Mike Ippolito getting ready to hop in here and join. Well, look at that beautiful beast. What's up, you?
What's going on?
Give us some Ready Player One, Mike.
I'm excited.
Oh, boy. I don't know where to start. I mean, I've read the book 3 times, and I don't read nothing 3 times, including my mail. So
nice.
But and I've waited a long time for this movie. Back in, I guess, about 3 years ago, my son was about halfway through it when he told me about it. And I've heard the name before, but I just never, you know, really got into it. And then about halfway reading it through the first time, he had mentioned that they were making this into a movie. So that was, it has been 3 years in the making. Plus the author, Ernest Klein, sold the rights as soon as the book was released in 2011. So it's been about 7 years in the making.
Wow.
And basically, I just wanted to share a quick experience as far as seeing the movie for, I guess, the first and second time. I've seen this four times already.
Wow.
Nice. Still haven't had enough.
Nice, so, Mike.
But we initially went to see this in IMAX. Mm-hmm. And the IMAX version of this actually just destroyed this movie for me. We left the movie theater with headaches. I mean, problems with our eyes. I mean, it wasn't just me. It was my kids as well. And it was just a disappointment to see this in IMAX. I don't know if it just wasn't formatted right or whatever it was done. But so I decided to see this movie in a Dolby Cinema.
Okay.
Well, let me tell you, if you ever want to see a movie, and I'll be sure to see Infinity War this way, I went to Dolby Cinema and it was about $2 or $3 more than a regular movie ticket. And to sit in this theater on a recliner with no less than 100 speakers all around you and in your chair. And when you sit and you see an explosion or, you know, something, you know, dramatic, like towards the end of the movie during the final fight scene.
Yes.
And when the sound is so intense that your vision becomes blurry.
Wow.
That's the ultimate viewing experience.
That is crazy.
You ever get a
chance, I love it.
See a movie like this in the Dolby Cinema. And it was just phenomenal. And it made up for what I seen in IMAX. And I enjoyed this movie better.
Answer me this, Mike.
IMAX.
Yes. When you saw it in the Dolby, because in my theater, because I've watched it twice, in my theater, when Jump came on for the first time, it wasn't that, you know, when the song first comes on, it wasn't that like, oh, Jump. It wasn't what I wanted from the song. So when that came on in that theater, was it good sound, better sound? What was it like?
Yeah, it was, the sound was just incredible. I mean, it's full Dolby Atmos. And I mean, there's speakers all around. I mean, as I said, there's no more than less than 100 speakers in the whole place, plus what's in your chair.
Oh my gosh. That's really crazy.
The projection was dual 4K HDR 10 laser projectors.
Oh, gorgeous.
And I mean, for a movie like this with the amount of CG work in it, I mean, the image was just so crystal clear and the realism that it brought out was just amazing. And I would definitely go see a movie, especially even Infinity War, just for the battle scenes, to experience the Dolby Atmos was just phenomenal.
That's awesome.
So, but I was, I wanted to see the movie for the first time and then to kind of the times after, just to kind of see the Easter eggs as far as, you know, what I could see, you know, and supposedly as of now, there's like 188 that they've come up with so far.
Oh my God.
Just what they've come up and just stuff that I've recognized.
Wait, did you recognize the Mayor Goldie Wilson flyer?
Yes.
I saw that. I was like, Mayor Goldie Wilson. I like the sound of that.
And if anybody noticed, on the opposite side was a same poster with Will Wheaton.
Really?
I didn't notice that.
Yes.
Where he's standing at the mirror, there's one side is Mayor Goldie Wilson. The other side is Will Wheaton. Now, Wheaton is also the mayor of the Oasis in the book.
Cool.
So that reference—that's a direct reference to the book.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm learning.
I mean, even stuff like that I picked up on right away, and you know, as far as the book goes, I mean, yeah, the book is normally always better than the movie, but the stuff that they did in this movie that was different as far as the challenges go justified. You know, the stuff that was the challenges that were missing from the book, they justified it with the race scene, the Shining. The Shining, I would have never in a million years expected it. In reference to the book, the initial challenges, as far as the first one, was to play the game Joust. And once you win 2 out of 3 games in Joust, and then you got to go through the entire movie of War Games by reciting the lines. You play Matthew Broderick's character and you have to recite the entire movie for points, and that gives you, you know, access to the first gate. Now, nobody really wants to see, you know, somebody playing video games for a while, you know, so I could see why they changed that up as well.
Yeah.
And as far as the second was also video game related, and that's also playing a video game. So to put something in The Shining justified from taking away from, you know, certain aspects of the book.
Wow.
So, and I mean, the one pivotal scene that I actually, you know, heard about was the distracted globe. That was one of the first things that Steven Spielberg wanted in this film, was the distracted globe, because it is a turning point in the book. And the visuals to this were taken out of the book word for word.
Really?
To where the description of the club and everything that was going on was portrayed on screen perfectly.
My awesome. Gosh.
And awesome. it was just, I saw it and I said, this is exactly from the book. When you read something, you visualize for yourself and now see it on the screen. That's the right vision you had, for what you have in your head to see. And it was just absolutely phenomenal, the amount of work. But the end scene where you see the Iron Giant, a pivotal part in the book is they use the Gundam to fight the Mega Godzilla. Well, in the book, it's actually Ultraman. The story behind that is that there are two companies in Japan fighting for the rights of Ultraman. So that's why they couldn't get the rights to use Ultraman in the movie.
Wow.
So that's something that I did here. And to have Ultraman would have just pushed it way over the edge for me, because seeing it in the book, I mean, it's a pivotal scene at the end. Wow. And just the amount of, you know, nostalgia that was in this movie and the amount of properties. I mean, the movie had a budget of $175 million, you know, and just these properties alone, I mean, just to get to some of the rights to these could have been a fortune. But when you're somebody like Steven Spielberg that calls a company and says, we would like to use your property in our movie, the answer they usually give is yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It does nothing but promote their company.
With a lot of it.
Yeah.
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 And I was blown away. And to me, and my son had pointed out this something to me as well after the movie was over. From what we know of the book, it seemed like the movie was rushed. I guess they wanted to get certain scenes that they felt necessary to use from the book. And as far as character development, it's just kind of like the characters were thrown out there. And if you've never read the book, they explained it enough that you knew who they were. But in the book, as it goes on, you learn a lot about the characters and, you know, the developing relationships. And, you know, I think what the idea was to get it to fit it within a certain 2-hour time frame, that they had to trim this stuff down and to get it to a point that they get the story out there and just kind of, you know, break it up and take out certain things that, such as like character development.
Let me ask you a question, Mike. Do you think that they'll ever have an extended release of this where there is some more of those scenes added where with the character development and some things like that? Do you think there'll be something like that in the future?
I don't know if they would actually release, you know, an extended version. I mean, an extended version would probably push it well over 3 hours.
That's true.
I'm sure if they have a video, like a home release on, you know, Blu-ray, they may have like a lot of stuff that may have been cut out, you know, like the special bonus features, stuff like that. But one scene towards the end, which I guess unless you've read the book and know the backstory to this, the end, right at the end of the movie where they say they close the Oasis on Tuesdays and Thursdays so you can be part of the real world, that is a direct setup to the next book.
Ooh.
Ernest Cline has already confirmed that the second book is already being written.
Wow.
So
Ready Player Two.
More than likely will definitely be a movie.
Ready Player Two, I bet.
Yes.
Could you imagine? That'd be a cool title, right? Now,
yeah, the title hasn't been released, but that's where
your experience, and I love hearing how you're comparing the book to the movie, because that really intrigues me and it makes me kind of jealous that you've read the book several times and I haven't. But having said that, I do know you to be a collector of some pretty awesome antiquities of the Ready Player One lore. Yes. Would you mind sharing a couple of those with us?
I have my keys.
Oh,
that's cool.
Now, you know, wow. I have to ask you, where do you get the keys and are they still available?
Yes. Hot Topic is, I guess, the premier merchant for all things Ready Player One.
Hot Topic,
and I think it was about $12 for the box.
Really?
Yeah, it wasn't that expensive.
That's not bad at all.
What challenges did you have to complete for the keys? And have you found the Easter egg yet?
No.
Have you met Halliday yet?
I have not.
Did you sign the contract?
You have not met Halliday yet?
Because you're the only one I've seen with the keys so far, so it's pretty impressive, Mike.
I think Austin Burke is literally an Easter egg for Pop. I think he is our own Easter egg.
I mean,
you're so shiny. All right, go ahead, Mike.
What I got out of the IMAX theater was a commemorative ticket.
Oh my gosh, that's a ticket right there, dude.
And my prized possession is right here.
Ready Player One, Ernest Cline.
Wow.
Oh, wait for it. Wait for it.
Find the page. Stuck.
Be gentle. Be gentle with the pages, Michael. Don't tear it. Oh, my gosh. Are you serious? Look at that.
Autographed
Ernest Cline novel.
No.
Yes.
Now, did you get that in person?
No, that was a special order. They had only 500 of those.
You just got one of 500. Jeez.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah.
So I did buy two of them, actually. I gave one to my son.
I have a big gold glove. That's all I got. That's all I got for you. That's awesome, Mike. So, I guess what we need to do now, since we've all kind of shared, Mike, did you have any other points that you wanted to share? Is there anything?
Just basically, there was certain things that, as far as like the soundtrack of the movie, you seem to get more of a vast soundtrack in the trailers than you did in the movie. Like songs
that
Pure Imagination should have been in the movie. There should have been some rush that would have been more true to the book.
Yeah.
Alan Silvestri killed the score of this movie. It's just unreal. All characters. I mean, I enjoyed the actors. The one actor I didn't really care for, I guess maybe if she's maybe not be, you know, that experienced, is Lena Waithe. She played H. Helen Harris.
I agree.
Yeah, that was. It seemed like she was either just trying too hard or.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seemed like the acting wasn't on point. And as far as the other two characters, besides the main, the actor that played Dato, he wasn't too bad. And then the other kid who played Sho, he really didn't have a whole lot in the movie. But he's referenced as Shoto in the book. They shortened it down, the name, because there was one Japanese, the character of Dato is Japanese, and Shota's all Japanese, but I guess to kind of maybe toss it up a little bit, they changed it to Sho to have one Chinese character in it. That was something that they had added. And as Parzival and Wade Watts, Ty Sheridan, I think he nailed it. And as far as Olivia Cook for Artemis, I thought she was great. The CG work, and just to sit and see this movie multiple times and catch the Easter eggs of, you know, just stuff like, I don't know if anybody picked up on the Pee Wee Herman bicycle or the Spaceballs Winnebago.
Yes, in the background. In H's shop.
Yes, in the background. You know, and just to see stuff like that, it was unbelievable. It was really an enjoyable movie, and I was not disappointed for the changes that were made from the book. They did not disappoint on screen. I think The Shining just killed it. I actually thought that second challenge was better than the book.
And even as someone who hasn't read the book, I am totally down with everything that Steven Spielberg put into this film, because I feel like now I've got more than the book, kind of, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really, really, truly awesome. Now, before we wrap up, guys, we're going to give our quick score. Now, if you're able to score this on a 1 to 10, now you can use points like 0.2, 0.3, 0.4. I'm going to start with Austin because he went first tonight. And then I'll go, and then we'll let Mike give his score at the last.
All right, awesome. Well, Mike, I have to agree with you on the point of H. I thought H was great in the Oasis, but the real-life version is a little, not as strong as the other ones to me. But Overall, I dug this movie a whole lot. I'm going to give it an 8.8 out of 10. Very high score for a great blockbuster. And if you guys haven't seen it yet, go catch in a theater. It's worth the experience for sure.
All right. And so that's an 8.8 from Austin. Now, I was actually sitting in the theater during the credits and I already had the score in my head. And so I knew, you know, for me, I'm a child of the 80s. So you start throwing me these 80s pop culture references, I'm immediately going to go back to the good times, like 83, 84. And I'm my mind just goes back to that nostalgia. I live and breathe 80s. Mm-hmm. And so with all of that said, I'm going to give Ready Player One an astounding 9.0.
Boom. It's a nice score, man.
Yeah. All right, Mike.
Yeah, for the exceptional, you know, the minor, you know, as far as like the actor goes and the soundtrack. And I think to me, it did the book justice. Mm-hmm. And I can't say I had any disappointments, you know, other than, you know, just the soundtrack, a little bit of the acting, but I'm going way off with a 9.8. I love this movie. Yeah. I'm going to go see it.
Nice.
For the fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth time. And I'm pre-ordering the 4K Blu-ray when it comes out.
I'm going to get it too, man. I'm going to get it too.
Thing. I love this movie and
yeah,
I can't get enough of it.
Awesome. Oh, man. So we have an 8.8, a 9.0, and a 9.8. Average mean of about a 9.4. Oh my God, guys. Oh my gosh. So freaking awesome. As you can tell, PopX truly soaked in this film so much. And if you love nostalgia, you love those retro moments, and you grew up on movies like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Pee Wee's Big Adventure, this movie is going to blow your mind with all the Easter eggs and references, and just everything that's been riddled throughout the storyline is beautifully done. And come on, it is a Steven Spielberg film. And I just dropped the mic right there. But so Darth Baca over in the chat room, he says he's giving it an astounding 10 out of 10. Awesome.
Yeah, Darth Baca.
Nice way to go. And Doug, if you want to share your score, you can, Doug. Before we go off the air, I'll say it live here. But all right, so we're going to wrap things up here on PopX. Man, I tell you, that was a fun episode. I can't believe an hour just flew by. It's insane. But so Austin Burke, if you don't mind, let's do the little bit of the outro here.
Get her done some. Well, I am Austin Burke at the Burkinator. You guys can find me on the Stardust app and on YouTube doing movie reviews and such. We are also part of an amazing network, Us Pop X, called the Gonna Geek Network. For all things even more geeky, head over to gonnageek.com and check out some amazing podcasts on our home network. Also, check us out on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, and Pinterest, all at PopXCast. Send comments and suggestions to us via email at popxcast@gmail.com. And for future and past shows, we're revving up to Avengers Infinity War. You guys can visit our official website at www.popxcast.com.
All right. Oh my gosh. And so Doug just gave his score. It's an 8.5 for anyone out there. So Doug is kind of like my nerd enthusiast at church. So, and I am Joseph Burke, AKA at Joseph Burks on the internet. And of course, hats off to my amazing always team PopX. That's it for this episode. And so I'm holding it in my hand here. I'm just going
to
bring out the glove here for a second. But so I'm just going to let the Infinity Gauntlet rest upon my breast as I finish this out. And so if you see a guy wearing a giant glove like this asking you to come into his minivan, I'd probably go.
I'd say
come on, big boy, I'm waiting for you. You know what I'm saying? All right, shut up, Thanos. All right, so we're out of here. All right, guys, we are out of here. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for downloading, and we will see you next time on Avengers Infinity War. So we may try to do one before Infinity War, like Infinity War predictions, like the week before Infinity War, and we'll do one right the weekend of Infinity War. So that's going to be so awesome. All right. It's going to be great. All right. With all that said, take care, and we'll see you next episode, episode 75. Oh, my gosh.
That's a lot of episodes.
From everyone at PopXcast, thanks for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribe for more great content. Drop us an email, popxcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, all at PopXcast. Get your geek on.